Packers fans are breathing a sigh of relief when Randall Cobb avoided major injury in the third preseason game. We welcome onto the show today Jeff Ash of the Green Bay Press Gazette to give his reaction not only to Cobb, but also his project to recognize the Lombardi-era Packers of the 1960s. We'll find out more coming up on Railbird Central next. Green Bay Packers fans, welcome to Railbird Central at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caravu. We're talking some Packers football this morning. We're talking about an upcoming fourth preseason game. We're talking about an injury to Randall Cobb. But first, we have joining us on the phone this morning, a guest on the show. We have Jeff Ash of the Green Bay Press Gazette. Mr. Ash, how you doing this morning?
Good morning, Brian.
Good to talk to you. We're going to talk about your project here momentarily, but I got to start with the news of the day, the news everyone's talking about, Randall Cobb. What was your reaction when you saw him exit the game and head to the locker room this past Saturday?
You know what, Brian? It's football. That happens. They play football, guys get hurt. It's unfortunate that it happens to be a high-profile player like Randall Cobb, but it doesn't sound like it's going to be a serious injury. It doesn't sound like it's going to be a long-term injury. So, hey, it's football. It happens.
It is, unfortunately. We know it's not a season-ending injury, but no one's been willing to comment whether Randall Cobb will miss some amount of time. Does it concern you at all that the Packers could possibly lose week one if Randall Cobb were to miss the season opener?
No, not at all. You know, again, it's unfortunate that it happens, but you know how it goes with the Packers and Ted Thompson, next man up.
Yes, absolutely. How do you think the Packers approach the preseason finale? It's looking like we're not going to see Aaron Rodgers whatsoever, But where does it end? Do you think that Eddie Lacy plays, that Clay Matthews plays? What's your prediction?
It's really hard to say. It's been an interesting preseason from that standpoint. You know, the use of the veteran players. It would not surprise me that neither of those guys played. You know, you have to play somebody. So
somebody's got to suit up.
Yeah, somebody's got to play. But again, I think they're going to take that opportunity to take a look at some players that they want to learn some more about, that they want to get some more film on. You know, the use of Brett Hundley the other night, I mean, gosh, to play him for three quarters, you really get to see what you have in a player in a way that you don't get to see in practices. And you would think that they're going to do that again with any number of players, offense, defense, special teams, to really use that time to assess what they have. That's just the Packer way.
Yeah, it is fun to watch the young guys in action because for a guy like Brett Hundley, it may be the last opportunity to see him, assuming Aaron Rodgers stays healthy and will knock on wood there. But Jeff, let's talk about this project of yours, and maybe the place to start is kind of with your job description at the Green Bay Press Gazette and what allows you to be in a position to do what you do.
At the Press Gazette, I've worked there for more than 25 years, and for almost the last 20 years, I've been involved in our Packers coverage in some way. I'm not a reporter, but I am somebody who's been an editor, working behind the scenes, putting that coverage out. And I kind of have a little niche on the staff, but maybe it's just because I'm older than dirt, but I'm kind of being the Packer historian. When older Packers die, I often wind up writing the news obits for them. We have in the last 12 years, we've published 4 history books on the Packers. One on Lambeau Field in 2003 when the stadium was renovated for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, we did one after Brett Favre allegedly retired for the first time. and then we did one in 2009 on the 90th anniversary of the team. And in the course of doing those books, particularly the Lambeau Field book and the team history book, we tapped a wonderful resource that we have. It's a photo archive. We have Packers photos going back to the 1940s at the Press Gazette, and we took some time to scan a couple thousand of these images, and we have that as a resource. But as far as this project, the Packers Dynasty Twitter project, it's microfilm. And just the ability to go and look up old newspapers on microfilm and find what's there and tweet it out.
So, yeah, I mean, getting into a little bit more of the details here, I mean, you're live tweeting the project. And, could you kind of describe more what goes into it for somebody that's not familiar?
Well, what it entails is I'm live tweeting what happened with the Packers 50 years ago in their championship seasons of 1965, 66, and 67, tweeting that as if it's happening today. And I'm doing it, at a 50-year-ago distance. So, if you look at the timeline for the Twitter account, which is Packers 65, 66, 67, the most recent tweets are from yesterday. What happened 50 years ago yesterday? And at some point today, I'll get around to tweeting what happened 50 years ago today with the Packers. And really how that comes together is I take a couple hours a week and look up the microfilm and go through the old newspapers and see what the news of the day was and maybe see what some of the other news of the day was besides the Packers. And throw it all in my notebook. And then when it comes to tweet it out, kind of sit through it and decide what's going to be interesting and how I'm going to present it and just tweet it out there.
We're talking to Jeff Ash of the Green Bay Press Gazette here at a Monday morning on Railbird Central. I think, by the way, you found a good Twitter handle, Packers 65, 66, 67. But when there's so many names already registered by somebody else, did you have a preferred Twitter handle or did you consider any other names?
The only one I considered was Packers Dynasty, and somebody has taken that and not used it.
That's a shame.
Yeah, which is unfortunate, but that's okay. 65, 66, 67 is fine. Actually, the name I gave the account is Packers Dynasty.
Okay.
So it's just the Twitter handle that's different.
Go ahead.
No, I didn't really consider anything else. I really didn't give a lot of thought to it. It was just something that, I had seen some similar projects, live tweeting historical events, and I thought, well, that would be fun to do with the Packers.
Did you have any hesitation committing to what's going to be a 3-year project when it's all said and done? Because that's quite an undertaking.
No, not really. Yes, it sounds like 3 years, but I think in reality, it's only going to be, I think there's going to be some downtime for it.
Yeah.
Because at that time in the 60s, the NFL was not a year-round thing like it is now.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're going to get to January and the NFL championship game, and then after January, we're going to put it to bed until training camp the following July. Again, there just wasn't much to happen in the off season in the 60s. The players went home, they went to work as steel salesmen or you know, whatever they did. And they didn't do it in Green Bay for the most part. And there was not a lot happening in Green Bay with the Packers during that time. You know, there wasn't an NFL network. There wasn't an internet. There wasn't Twitter. you know, there was television, but even that, some other people have asked me about that. And really the big difference that I see already in doing the project is just the scale of the NFL. It's so much larger, so much bigger today. And it's really, in some respects, pretty remarkable how small it was back then.
Yeah, yeah. Can you give us an example of what we can find if we follow the project, either what happened today or yesterday or the past few days that was notable?
Well, it's pretty much everything under the sun. I go back and for the most part, I'm reading Lee Remmel's coverage of the press of the Packers in the Press Gazette. He appears to be the guy who covered it the most, at least as far as I've gone. I've been doing this for a little over a month now and going through training camp with the Packers. It's interesting, in 1965, 50 years ago, the Packers started training camp with two-a-day practices on 13 of the first 15 days of training camp. Now, that's 26 practices in 15 days. and then they cut it back to a single practice a day.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been interesting that there's quite a bit of coverage during the 2 days. The Press Gazette did a lot with the coverage. And then when they got the single-day practices, there just isn't that much. They're getting into a groove of, you know, previewing the game, and I don't know if Lombardi, you know, cut back the access to the media or what, but there just isn't as much there. But again, you ask about, well, what's there on the account, okay? And what's there is really, you know, if we had Twitter on yesterday, August 30th, 1965, you would have seen that the Packer practice got rained out. So they went and watched film of last year's game against the Cleveland Browns, who they're going to be playing in this weekend's preseason game. And they also made some player moves. They traded a second-year lineman to the Giants for the always-familiar undisclosed draft choice. And they cut three more rookies, who most of whom had not gotten any mention in the paper at all. And another thing that I do with it also is I kind of look for things, you know, the Packers did not exist in 1965 in a vacuum.
Yep.
And other things go on in the world, you know, that are interesting to me. I don't know if they're interesting to anybody else, but just in the month that we've had it, you know, we had the Watts riots in Los Angeles. You know, that happened. You have the Gemini 5 space flight, which 50 years ago was a huge deal. You know, space travel was very big back then,
mm-hmm.
Very big news. Yesterday's news was that other news was that Casey Stengel, the manager of the New York Mets, had retired. He was 75. So I drop in that kind of thing from time to time. I don't know if anybody else is interested in it, but I am. And it's just, again, it's a way to say, you know, look, it's not all Packers all the time. Other things happen in the world. Another one we had 2 days ago on the 29th was WFRB Channel 5 in Green Bay had its first color broadcast. Color TV was becoming a thing across America and in Green Bay. And gosh, you don't think of it, but wow, yeah. There, you know, it used to be everything was black and white, and all the TV stations in Green Bay were making preparations to do most of their broadcast in color, carry most of their network programming in color. And, you know, that to me is interesting. So those are the types of things that are in there. And, you know, you look for, I just try to find things that appeal to the broadest audience.
Yeah, I think it's cool to put it in context, and hopefully we're going to get to more exciting things to come than releasing three rookies who barely played. But of course, you have yet to get to the regular season games yet, so looking forward to that. Maybe to bring things full circle here, it's Super Bowl 50 this year. Do you think the Packers can win the first Super Bowl and follow it up with the 50th Super Bowl?
Well, it's certainly possible. You would hope so. But again, you know, it's football, and injuries happen, and you hope that they're able to stay away from any catastrophic injuries to you know, players that really matter, playmakers. The NFL is a marathon, and you know, that marathon is underway, and getting through training camp fairly unscathed is one thing, and you know, the Packers have already taken a nick with Jordy Nelson being lost for the year. So, you know, it sounds cliche to say, but you know, if they're able to stay healthy, if they are able to hang on playmakers, you know, over the course of the year, you always win a game or two that you shouldn't win, and usually lose a game or two that you shouldn't lose. And, you know, hopefully you don't get too much of one or the other, or you don't get too much of the losses that you're not supposed to have. But, yeah, I think so. You know, you look around the NFC North, and not the Bears, not the Lions. The Vikings are a little better. But, you know, it's just how it all comes together and how some of the other teams come together. And I think they have as good a shot as anybody.
Well, no matter what happens this year, we can follow the Packers Dynasty Twitter account and know we're going to read a success story. We know the ending to that story, and it's a good one. So, Jeff, thank you so much for joining us on Railbird Central this morning. Appreciate you taking time out of your vacation, by the way, to join us. Appreciate it, and we're going to send people your way to follow the Twitter account.
All right, thanks, Brian. Appreciate the time. Thanks for the interest.
Okay, thanks a lot. Take care. Jeff Ash of the Green Bay Press Gazette joining us on a Monday morning at Railbird Central. My call to action today, a little bit different than usual. Please give this account a follow, Packers 65, 66, 67. It's so simple. It's just fun to read when it comes across your Twitter feed to find out what was happening 50 years ago with the Green Bay Packers when they were in the midst of a three-year championship run, a three-peat during the Vince Lombardi era. So just give it a follow. It's like I said, it's just fun to see what was happening back then. But continuing on with the rest of the show, Packers news of the day and kind of my reaction to what happened over the weekend. The Packers lose in the preseason to the Philadelphia Eagles. 39-26 was the final score. And of course, the big story coming out of the game, Randall Cobb's injury. The word from Ian Rapoport of the NFL Network is that Randall Cobb has an AC joint sprain, and it's said to be minor. That's the last we've heard on the situation. The Packers haven't commented publicly on the matter since Saturday's game, with no practice or press conference being held Sunday, and there won't be any today on Monday either. It's been said Cobb's injury won't be season-ending, but I think at this point everybody's kind of wondering if he'll miss some amount of time. And I just don't know the answer at this point. I don't think anybody does. Maybe they do within the organization, but aren't saying so. Kind of just waiting it out. The good news is Cobb can basically rest for 2 weeks until the season opener on September 13th. And maybe that will be enough. You have to imagine, even if he were to be fine, he's not going to play in the preseason finale this upcoming Thursday against the New Orleans Saints. I think that's probably a safe assumption. It's been a sigh of relief, however. I know there have been many out there that have been critical of Mike McCarthy, wondering why he'd even risk having a player like Randall Cobb out on the field. Of course, you saw once Randall Cobb went down, Devontae Adams barely played after that as well. Packers had already lost Jordy Nelson for the season. Then they lost Randall Cobb temporarily. They're like, we got to put a stop to this. Devontae Adams came out, and they were in preservation mode at that point and got many of the younger wide receivers playing time from that point on. But, you know, we wait and see to find out more about Randall Cobb. He wasn't the only injury on Saturday. Offensive lineman Brian Bulaga exited with an ankle injury, and Micah Hyde with neck spasms. Bulaga doesn't appear to be serious. His injury doesn't appear to be. Mike McCarthy used the word sprain, but then said even maybe it's more of a bruise, which would indicate it's probably even less serious. It's still a concern, however, that Bulaga's injury now makes it 4 out of 5 starting offensive linemen dealing with injuries. And you can imagine the Packers won't take many chances with them in the preseason finale. So Bulaga joins David Bakhtiari, Josh Sinn, and TJ Lang, none of whom played this past Saturday, leaving Corey Linsley as the only fully healthy starting offensive lineman. Be interesting to see how the Packers are going to handle this preseason finale here. And with Hyde, I know during the game, you always kind of hold your breath when you hear about a neck injury. But all things considered, when you got the specifics of the injury a little bit later on in the night and they said neck spasms, that was kind of a welcome relief, kind of knowing it's not anything to do with, the discs in the back or neck or anything like that. And not to say Micah Hyde might not, you know, miss a little bit of time, but probably not talking about anything, you know, season threatening here. So that's a good thing. Giving a little bit of a post-game report, and just to kind of maybe give a little more commentary on our post-game chips report, as you can find published after in the immediate aftermath of every game at 24/7 Sports, and who I handed the chips out to this week. The blue chip players, the guys who played the best, starting with quarterback Brett Hundley, starting in place of Aaron Rodgers, who didn't play whatsoever. And it was a rather impressive performance from Brett Hundley. In the preseason game, he did well. In the second preseason game, he did poor. And you were kind of hoping he would bounce back, and he did, and then some. You can see why the Packers traded up for him in the fifth round. Really, you know, all things considered, you know, kind of making his first ever start in front of a sold-out Lambeau Field, that's got to be a pressure-packed situation for a guy like Brett Hundley, who's never done it before, probably a little bit different for Aaron Rodgers, who's been down that road and is now used to the pressure. But Brett Hundley, obviously, the pressure of the world on his shoulders, and he really stepped up to the plate, so to speak. You know, threw for over 300 yards in just three quarters of action before giving way eventually to Matt Blanchard. And you know, yeah, he threw an interception. But I thought Hundley played well. The best part of his game, I thought, was kind of showing a pocket presence. And you knew he was athletic when the Packers drafted him. If you spent any amount of time watching college football, maybe he wasn't the best runner in college football as a quarterback, or he wasn't Marcus Mariota, but Brett Hundley could, you know, he did a good job rushing, you know, in college, I guess you could say, and he showed the same ability, not just rushing, but showing a presence of mind to kind of step up in the pocket or sidestep the pass rush, whatever it called for, and buying time with his feet. I thought that was the most impressive development on Saturday evening to see from Brett Hundley. And buying time and finding some receivers downfield. He threw two touchdown passes. Perhaps the thing you want to see a little bit more out of him is you know, throwing the ball downfield. I think, you know, during the preseason, you've seen a lot of his passes be screens, be checkdowns, things like that. And those are important, too. You got to do that in the NFL. But it, kind of the next step he's got to take is I'm still waiting for the 25-yard strike down the field. There haven't been too many of those. There have been some shorter ones down the field. Certainly had a nice catch and run to Ty Montgomery right down the middle of the field. But, you know, it was probably only a 10-yard pass that Montgomery then took it for 40-some yards, something like that. Nice play, no doubt about it. Waiting for that, you know, 25-yard strike through the air from Brett Hundley. And I mean, those are tough for any quarterback to make, but just looking for that once to see that, you know, the next step in his progression. But regardless, good job by Brett Hundley. He took the next, you know, he took the step he was supposed to take and did it. The other blue chips going to the number 3, 4, and 5 wide receivers on the Packers roster. Kind of, you know, we said it already. Jordy Nelson goes down for the year. Randall Cobb goes out temporarily. Packers going to preserve Devontae Adams now. Going to give him the white glove treatment. And so, you know, the kind of guys you're looking to step up and kind of replace Jordy Nelson's production. They showed they were up to the challenge on Saturday night. Guys like Ty Montgomery, Jeff Janis, and Miles White. And they all did something impressive. Like we said before, Ty Montgomery taking a 10-yard reception and turning it into a 40-some-yard catch and run. He only had 2 receptions on the day, but they covered 70-plus yards. Jeff Janis catching 3 passes and more than I was extremely impressed with Jeff Janis's development because you wonder, oh, he's just a deep threat. That's all he can do. Well, he actually showed he can make a catch in traffic with defensive backs draped over him. He showed that this past day, and then he caught the nice long touchdown pass from Matt Blanchard, who did, you know, have the nice 25-yard downfield strike to Jeff Janis for a touchdown over the head catch. That was a beautiful play. Great job by Jeff Janis. And on top of that, Miles White caught a team-leading 9 receptions this past Saturday, including a few circus catches. He made one on the flat of his back in which the defensive back was flagged for some holding or pass interference. I forget off the top of my head, but he's on the flat of his back. He makes the catch. It's kind of this one-handed deal that he hauls it in and the defender's arm is over his eyes. It's on the sideline. It was just a great play by Miles White. And you know, he showed throughout the course of the game, he really got a lot of playing time when these injuries happen. And you know, he did well. So, you know, kind of the guy is considered number 3, number 4, number 5 on the depth chart in no particular order. All up to the challenge, all played really well. Brett Hundley finding many of these guys for several receptions over the course of the game. So great job by them. Your red chips, your good but maybe not great players. We had in this category 2 running backs, actually, and I thought the more impressive one was from Rajon Neal, the guy fighting for the Packers' number 3 halfback job. Perhaps maybe he solidified that status during this game, a game in which Alonzo Harris didn't play at all. Alonzo Harris had really been pushing for this number 3 job throughout training camp. The undrafted rookie out of Louisiana Lafayette has played really well, and maybe he's a practice squad candidate. He unfortunately had a hand injury that kept him out of the game, but Rajon Neal really responded. He caught 1 touchdown pass from Brett Hundley, kind of a pass out in the flat that he took 30-some yards, kind of put on the afterburners you like that burst out of him. He's got an element to his game unlike any other player on the roster, whereas Eddie Lacy and James Starks are your power backs. Rajon Neal's a little bit more of the speed type. He's a good receiver. He's kind of probably the best threat out of the backfield receiving than any back the Packers have on their roster. He also returned a kickoff like 47 yards or 41. I end up getting called back by penalty, so I end up going down officially for only like 31 yards. But looks good out there, so kudos to Rajon Neal, and he averaged over 5 yards a carry, something like that. Good all-around performance. And on top of that, James Starks, who had a rushing touchdown, who also caught it like a 30-yard screen pass and really picked up a nice blitzing linebacker and pass protection. So I thought James Starks looked really well. So those are your red chips from Saturday night's game. And then your cow chips. And there were no shortage of candidates
in a game that was 39-14 at halftime. The Packers defense looked absolutely pathetic, and they didn't even, you know, I could have gave everybody on defense practically a couch hit, but perhaps the worst of the worst, linebacker Sam Barrington. And it was kind of interesting because he looked so bad in pass coverage, and it just kind of was like a redo of you know, last season when you saw both A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones, and those guys were so slow, and Sam Barrington doesn't look much better. He basically got beat for two touchdown passes on Saturday night when he was the primary player in coverage. And, you know, gave up a couple other receptions on that. It just didn't look good in space. I remember on one of the passes in which he wasn't, that didn't even go for a touchdown, but he was kind of like backpedaling on his heels on a pass to Darren Sproles, I believe. It didn't look comfortable out in space and moving around and moving laterally. But credit Sam Barrington, he did pretty well against the run. He is more of your thumper type. He is, I think he's really good to have out there as a run stuffer. The Packers really, this is going to be a big challenge, I think, this week and maybe going into the regular season, kind of finding somebody perhaps. I don't know if you can have Sam Barrington out on the field on 3rd and 10. In obvious passing situations where they're going to try to expose him somehow. Opposing offenses are going to try to get some sort of matchup with a tight end or a running back out of the backfield that are going to try to get him one-on-one with Barrington. They're going to go after him. And maybe it's a good thing that the Packers learned that lesson now. And I don't know what options the Packers have, because Clay Matthews actually is pretty good in coverage for a linebacker, but he's also the best pass rusher on the team. So, you know, more often than not, they're going to want him rushing the passer. So what do you do then? I think the challenge this week is you might give Jake Ryan a long look in that role and see if he can be your nickel, your dime linebacker who's going to be out there in pass coverage. I don't know whether he's got it either. You know, he's a guy who's coming off an ACL injury 2 years ago, and I don't think he's kind of known as this real athletic guy. Maybe he's more athletic than Sam Barrington. Well, that's why I want to see. I want to see him out there. And more, even more than that, I know this guy's even further down the depth chart. I'd like to see Joe Thomas get a nice long look in the preseason finale. I mean, that's what the preseason finale is all about. You're not going to hardly play the starters at all. I want to see him. He looks good in space. He's the kind of guy who looks fluid out there, if nothing else. Maybe he could be a nickel or a dime linebacker for the Packers. Possibly, maybe that could be his role on the team. I want to see Joe Thomas out there for 50 snaps. Maybe not that many. I don't know. I want to see him get a nice long look this upcoming Thursday against the Snaps to see if he can maybe be that guy. Maybe the Packers looking for a waiver wire pickup. Again, a linebacker that's good in coverage that's cut by another team. That's really a concern right now, considering Sam Barrington's performance on this past Saturday. Again, good in run stuffing. He's 1st and 10. You want Sam Barrington out there. I think he'll be okay. Just not in passing situations. And then, so the other cow chip from Saturday night, the worst of the worst, and it didn't go to any one player, but it went to the Packers. Special teams as a whole, get this, the Packers had 8 penalties on special teams alone Saturday night. 8 penalties was absolutely ridiculous. Ron Zook, new special teams coordinator Ron Zook, now on notice, I think. Maybe not on notice, but a wake-up call, you could say, after a dreadful performance. You know, everything from holding to 12 men on the field to illegal man downfield. That they had several holding penalties on kickoff returns. It was absolutely ridiculous. This was a unit whose you know, was the weak link of the Packers last year. Yeah, yeah, the Packers defense wasn't great last year. Special teams was abysmal, and it's looking to be the same this year if things don't change. And again, it's a good thing it's the preseason. Maybe this is they take this as a learning experience and a wake-up call and figure out things got to improve. I know two guys that was really disappointing to see. Each Chris Banjo had two penalties on him. Here's a guy who's the only way he's going to make the team is on special teams, and he had the past 2 years. And then Sean Richardson didn't look that good either. He ended up missing a few blocks. He was on kick return. I mean, these are the guys who special teams is supposed to be their thing, and they look poor. So hopefully that changes for these kind of guys, and we'll see this upcoming Thursday. But next segment, the day ahead in the world of the Green Bay Packers. Today on Monday, practice has been rescheduled. Monday was supposed to be the final training camp practice open to the public. It has been pushed back to Tuesday. Your last opportunity to see the Packers on the practice field, really, until 2016, because during the regular season, no practices are open to the public. So take note of that if you're in the area and want to see the Packers one last time for free. There's perhaps several reasons for this rescheduling, reshuffling of the practice schedule, none of which the Packers have commented on publicly, but kind of reading between the lines here, I can, you know, for one thing, maybe they're looking for a little more time for recovery, seeing as, you know, the last preseason game was on Saturday, this upcoming preseason game's on Thursday, so there's basically only 4 days in between that they could probably, the players' bodies could use a little bit of a rest, you know, and now especially in light of injuries to Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Brian Bulaga, and everybody else that's dealing with injuries right now, that their bodies could use a little bit of R&R. But on top of that, maybe there's a little extra time for evaluation here. Maybe the Packers want to see some of the players on the roster bubble, a little bit of more film on them, because the cut down date to 75, the deadline is on Tuesday this upcoming week. So the Packers got to basically part ways with a dozen players by Tuesday. So maybe they're just looking for a little bit more time, and maybe they want to avoid a kind of an awkward situation where the players practice on Monday only to release a dozen players on Tuesday. They just want to avoid that totally, so they're going to avoid practice whatsoever. But that'll do it for today's show, folks. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining me here on a Monday morning at 24/7 Sports and Cheesehead TV. We'll be back again on Wednesday. Got it scheduled here. In fact, our guest on Wednesday, Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com, our in-season weekly guest, starting a few weeks early here in the preseason. But we'll have him on from here on out every Wednesday for the rest of the year, maybe with the exception of the bye week, but giving us his unique statistical analysis that they provide at ProFootballFocus.com. So looking forward to a whole season worth of that, and excited to talk to Nathan Yonke, maybe about some of these roster bubble guys on Wednesday. But that coming up at 8:30 a.m. Central Time Wednesday, live edition of the show every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, on demand, and podcasted later in the day. Once again, my call to action today, it's to follow Packers 65, 66, 67 on Twitter. I think that's you'll find that to be a really cool Packers Twitter account and a neat follow. So do that, and we'll see you again on Wednesday. See you, folks. I leave you today with a song called Made to Measure by Umphreys McGee on Psy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.
Trying to say trusted mind.